who will master Motorland. MotoGP, 5 races to go. And the next one starts now. Good start from Cal Crutchlow from third on the grid, but coming through from the second row is Jack Miller and Franco Morbidelli. And Morbidelli goes through ahead of his teammate and will lead.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 648. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vickery, and joining me as ever is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, dude?
It's pretty good. I'm trying to manipulate myself into believing that it's not getting cold out and that racing is not going to end here shortly.
Oh, the cold days of winter are approaching.
Yes, I mean, it's to the point where I am sitting here with a nice hot cup of tea, a London Fog, which is a shot of vanilla, a shot of caramel, and Earl Grey tea. It's very delicious.
No, that does sound good. Quite the contrary of weather in my neck of the woods. I actually just came in from outside. I was having a nice dinner on the patio because it's still...
Yeah, you suck, okay?
80-something degrees right now.
Don't tell me that.
And,
hey, at least I'm not in Minnesota. They got like 7 inches of snow.
You know, so. I saw that. I have a family out in Iowa, and they were taking pictures of all the snow on their cars and everything this morning. I was like, geez, already? Like, oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, everything's been interesting over here. We are in month 7, so little guy will be here soon enough.
Yeah,
the wife is looking very pregnant and feeling very pregnant. So,
yeah,
there's that. Work is...
That happens.
Work is good over here. I am yet to go to another position again. So my year of movement continues. So
nice. Good for you, bud.
How that affects the show, I'm not sure, because I think I've got... when that kicks on, I might have a little bit more of a busy schedule. But we're going to have to do the old wait and see. And there's some travel involved, I think, over in that. So all fluid, but hopefully most of that entry period will take place when racing is not upon us like it is now. And so if you haven't caught on by now, we will be covering the MotoGP round from Aragon, and boy, what a weekend it was for racing. If you don't
that was like chaos came back,
right?
And it's like the good chaos.
Exactly.
So
exactly,
the whole thing, the whole weekend, it was spectacular weekend.
Excellent. And if this is one of those weekends where if you have someone that wants to get into racing, this is one of those weekends you're like, hey, have a seat. Let me show you what this is all about. And you'll get a great idea of what these classes can do. But, Jim.
You know, you were so right about that, because I was watching. This is one of the first times I've actually had enough time to sit and watch it all happen live. Because usually I watch it on the app and I watch it a little bit later. But nothing was going on. I'm just sitting downstairs, getting ready for the MotoGP race. My boy comes downstairs. He's like, oh, is the race on? I'm like, yeah, sit down and have a watch. Dude, he was sucked in, and he really hasn't quite caught the racing bug yet, but this sucked him in. He's like, yeah, well, we'll talk about it later. But I mean, you're right. It sucked him in. It was so good.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I got a couple friends. I probably have about 5 or 6 friends that now regularly watch MotoGP because of 2016, which was very similar to this. We had a whole bunch of different winners, different makes, different models, first time winners, podium finishers, all of that. That was a crazy season. And they all started watching then, and they've been hooked. And this season they've just been sitting there like, wow, it's really good. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of the golden era. This year was a complete toss up. So it's good. But before we get to talking about anything else, Jim, we got to start the show off right. Oh, it's back, ladies and gentlemen. A beer has made an appearance on the show. Now, this is an old friend. There's nothing new here, but I do have a story for her. So this is my Almanac Brewing Company again. It's the Love Hazy IPA. It's good. I got it because I had some friends over the day, so I wanted to make sure I had something reliable and good. But normally this time of year, Jim, in the fall, I start going for like Oktoberfest beers, and I start going for, sometimes I'll try some of the pumpkin ones, whatever it can be. But unfortunately for myself, my taste buds have changed, and I just can't do it for some reason. The Oktoberfest beers are very skunky to me now for some reason. I don't know if I got a bad batch, or I tried a couple, and I was like, what's going on? I used to love this. And then the pumpkin beers are just, I think what happens is there's too many that have been made, and so nobody does really a good job anymore. Or I just got sick of it. I can't tell. But all of them, I just kind of drink it, and I was like, okay, sure. If your friend hands you one, you wouldn't turn it away, but you don't pull it out of the ice chest. It was kind of, that's how I felt about it. So, strange. Yeah. Maybe I've just been drinking the hazy too much lately, and we'll have to start making. The only problem is I can't drink the all my spicy dark beers on the show because I'll get plastered. I got to be able to do some decent job on the back end of the show, and I'll be slurring all my words and probably saying things I shouldn't if we ever want guests on the show again, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And
so what you're saying is it really doesn't affect you at all.
Mm. I guess you got a good point there. All right. Oh. Perfect. So let's see where we got a little bit of news. We did have to kind of jump in last week. Sorry for the long wait, everybody. The show will get out sooner this week, but me and Jim recorded it, and then my editing stuff has been taking some weird turns lately. It requires a bunch more detail to it. And then we had a bunch of breaking news that we just kind of wanted to wait and get confirmation of. And so we filled it in last week. But that kind of leads us into our first topic of today. And what's that, Jim?
Rossi doesn't ride because Rossi has contracted the coronavirus.
Right. Now,
so that right there tells you that this virus knows no bounds and no limits. You took down the doctor.
As ironic as that is.
That's what I keep thinking to myself. It's like, well, that's really super ironic. It really shouldn't be that way. But yeah, that's how it kind of went down.
Right. So my question to you is, because I haven't had a chance to really look into this. I'm not sure if you have, but this does leave a vacant seat in the Yamaha garage. Now, last week, of course, we got the, you know, I think it was like a Thursday they found out, so they couldn't do anything about it. But if I recall correctly, Jim, there is a Spanish rider who just left MotoGP recently that signed to be Yamaha's test rider. Could get his car and take a nice little drive through the countryside, pop up an Aragon perhaps, and throw his leg over a Yamaha?
Well, you'd think he might, but he didn't.
Mm.
And then again, you know, it could have been the fact that he might have had too much good ham to eat.
he's not as good as GP.
They decided not to replace Rossi with anyone.
Hmm.
Not too sure where that came from. Now, whether Rossi rides this coming weekend, don't know. Are they going to actually then put a reserve rider / Jorge Lorenzo onto a Yamaha? Don't really know, but I mean, the crew was there. The bikes were there. You think they'd have put somebody in there, but
so
yeah, I guess they just couldn't swing it, couldn't make it happen.
I would like to think that maybe it's two reasons why they don't. One, it's a year where everyone's watching their budget, right? And wherever you can limit your resource, the better. Two, maybe it's a regulation thing with coronavirus and everyone have to be in that bubble. I mean, sure, they could test the person and all of that, but I wonder if that's kind of like their deal is to not bring in anybody that isn't supposed to be there regularly.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that possibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the funny part about the rules and how it's all done. And it's the bubble. Maybe the bubble's got something to do with it. Who knows? I mean, it kind of, that whole bubble thing kind of leads us into like sort of the next little bit of news, which is the fact that Moto3 contender Tony Arbolino wasn't allowed to race by Italian authorities because when he had a flight back from Le Mans to Italy, they found out that he was sitting too close to somebody on the airplane who had been tested and found to have COVID-19.
Mm.
So he doesn't even have it. He's just too close to somebody who had it because he's on an airplane. And here we are in this grand world of things. It's like, you got to be kidding me, people.
That's a bit much. I mean, if you test and you don't have it, I can see isolating him for a certain amount of hours and then checking again, maybe, but to say, no, thank you, that's a thinker.
Yeah, I know, but there might be a little more to it. Mm-hmm. Don't really know yet, but I mean, that's kind of the impression that was kind of thrown down.
Ooh.
Yes.
You just reminded me of something. Everybody that hates when we talk about F1, I'm sorry, we're going to do it again. But because you said, you've been sitting too close, and you think like, oh, maybe there's more to it. You know how Lance Stroll got a tummy ache and he couldn't make his race and Nico Hulkenberg had to fill in for him? And then a week later, he had a positive COVID test. Okay, dude, why don't you just say that from the beginning, right? You ain't going to BS us. So, like Jim said, maybe there's more to this story than just sitting next to someone on the flight. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it comes down to that whole thing of maybe Arbolino does have it. They just don't want to admit it. Or maybe he caught it in some, maybe he was doing something he shouldn't have been doing. Like, I don't know, frequenting a bar as a... No, wait a minute. He's only 19, right? So I guess he really can't frequent bars. But maybe
unless
he was at
age is 18 where he's at.
Well, that's true. Somehow I'm stuck on the fact that I'm an American and you can't drink till you're 21.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're in the military and you're on base.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe he was frequenting the club and he shouldn't have been at the club. Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, there's, a whole bunch of things. Maybe the person he was sitting too close to was his girlfriend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of things that it could possibly be. We have no idea. But that's the official line.
Okay. This next bit of news is interesting. I haven't read about this at all. Yes. So go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'll preface this by the fact that I didn't know about it either until I listened to the Formula One podcast that I listened to, which is the Park for May. So shout out to Todd and Grace. They had this story. So I went to and found it on Visor Down, which is the only place I could find it to be. And it is about Spa-Francorchamps circuit, which those of you who follow Formula One know that it's probably one of the greatest racetracks that exist in the world today,
with one of the greatest corners, El Rouge.
Yes. El Rouge, Radeon, yeah, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's been reported, and it's actually started because there were some pictures of the construction, that Spa is spending 80 million euros to update the track. And they're not changing the track, they're not changing or reprofiling corners, but what they're doing is they are improving the runoff at five corners: La Source, Radeon, Blanchimont, Stavelot. And by doing that, it's a requirement of them, it's required by the track to do these upgrades so that they can host a 24-hour sports car event in 2022. With the upgrades that are required, what happens is that the track becomes FIM certified class B, which means World Superbike could conceivably in 2022 or 2023 return to Spa. It also means that if they continue on this program of addressing different corners and upgrading everything, which this whole project, which includes new grandstands and some other things, is supposed to take over 10 years to complete. But there is a chance, cross your fingers, MotoGP people, that we will see MotoGP bikes at one of the greatest circuits in the world. Mm-hmm. Cross your fingers.
Yeah, there will have to be more work done than what they've already announced to get MotoGP to come there.
There has to be a whole new pit complex. And, yeah. I mean, there's... But I think Formula One kind of wants a new pick. I don't get that because I have been to Spa. Mm-hmm. It's one of the I'm lucky enough that the people I work for, we have a plant that is in Belgium that is literally 60 minutes, less than 60 miles. Sorry, not
dude,
minutes.
It sounds
less
like you need to be doing some work overseas at least once a year.
Oh, don't worry, man. I got so many friends over there. It's like, if I want anything, if I'm over there, I got everything I want. But,
and you're just saying this now, Jim, 2022, let's pack it up. Let's go. Let's get some plane tickets. Come on, man.
We still might be in a lockdown pandemic.
That's why I gave us 2 years, not next year.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. Okay, fine. I'm cool with it. But it's getting back to it, I've actually been to Spa. I mean, I haven't been there when there was actually racing going on. It was a Porsche track day, which was pretty amazing to see all those old Porsches and new Porsches and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I've walked through the paddock. I've walked through those garages. I've stood there. There really isn't that much wrong with the garages. So I'm not so sure that you really would have to upgrade per se, because what most people don't know is they have the on the start finish straightaway. That's like for all the Formula One cars, which you could easily house all the MotoGP teams in there. And then as you come around La Source and you head down to Eau Rouge, that is a secondary pit complex that you could easily put all the Moto2 and probably, well, you could probably put some of the Moto2 up on the upper paddock, and you could probably put the other half on the secondary paddock, and you could put all the Moto3 guys there as well. So I think there's plenty of room from that point, but I do think it would be amazing to be there for MotoGP. If it actually happens, it's going to have to be a bucket list. Yeah, we're going kind of a thing, because
yeah.
If you stand at the bottom of Eau Rouge, you do not understand how steep that goes uphill.
Yeah.
And to see these guys go they're through there on 300 horsepower motorcycles will be phenomenal. To say the least.
No, it's very much the same the first time you go to Laguna Seca and you stand at the top of the corkscrew and you're like, wow, they just fall down the side of a building. This is insane.
Yeah. So agreed.
I mean, that's a track. That's on my list of tracks to get to for any event, really. That's where the track kind of supersedes the event I'm going to. I'd be happy to watch anything there just because the track is infamous. And it's so cool how it's just like planted in the middle of a forest when they pull back.
You know, that's one of the things that... I'm a history nerd. I love history, and I love World War II and everything that happened as far as from a historical perspective. I'm not trying to say that I love war. I don't. It's a part of history, and I find it fascinating. And when I got there, the very first time I went there, and I go to the track, and it's in the middle of the Ardennes Forest. First thing that comes to my mind is, my God, how did they ever move a tank through here? But they did. So it's a great place and a great location. It's a phenomenal racetrack. I really, really want to see bikes there again, because I think the last time bikes were there was like 2003. So, yeah. So cross your fingers, everybody. You know, hopefully we get MotoGP at Spa.
That's a point. Now, we did have a little bit of listener feedback this week. And since it was addressed to you, Jim, why don't you go ahead and give us the old rundown?
Well, this is from Michael McDonald, and it's about the American Racing Joe Roberts clusterfuck that, in his words, not mine, in Le Mans, although it was a cluster, let's just face it. He goes on to say, hey, Jim, regarding your question of just what went wrong, it's true that the team was swapping shocks. We had discussed that, Skyler. We were getting into it, and we thought that could have been it, but you had talked about other things, you know, gearing, things like that may have changed and whatnot. He says, you'll see the video from pit lane after the bike was pushed on its rear stand back to the paddock to complete the swap. It's common to run more sag and softer compression valving on wet tires, particularly at the rear, to improve traction and drive off of the apex. That is a very true statement. When I had my bikes in the wet, we would crank, put a little more rebound in, take some dampening in there so that it would be softer, more compliant, which is kind of how you want it to be. He goes on. The question is, why did a 3-minute job take over 10 minutes? Which is where we struggled. Like, if you're doing this, why couldn't you have done it in the time that was allotted to you? It's a job that, Michael continues, a job every team completed in due time, including the crew for Joe's teammate. Could the team have crossed over the shock bolt? That's what you were talking about, Skyler. Could they have damaged the needle bearing at the lower mount? Maybe they found an issue with the brake pads, chain master link, and or cush drive assembly. All things that, Skyler, you pointed out as well. Lots of questions in my mind, but speculation, again, this is full speculation, is that the team waited to change to dry setup due to dark, ominous clouds to the southwest, increasing winds from that direction. Once the team crew chief witnessed that every team had switched to dry setup, the call was made, which was probably too late. I love your speculation there, Michael. I think that's probably exactly what happened. So then we started talking about how the fact that Joe didn't start from pit lane and he was in the back. Well, Michael clears this up for us as well. He says the bigger issue was the actual start, which it appears I am not familiar with the FIM regulations. No, I'm not. I don't even want to read the rule book because that would just ruin what we do here. So once the siding lap begins, any racer in the paddock may enter the track for the siding lap up until the pit lane lights are red, which occurs when the safety car approaches the back staging area. Joe entered the track correctly and completed the siding lap. However, he did not complete the lap in front of that safety car. So therefore, the marshals should have directed him into pit lane where he must start the race. He surrendered his pole position when the bike was not ready on the grid at the beginning of the siding lap. He could have started from back of the grid if and only if he completed the siding lap ahead of that safety car. How the marshals screwed this up is baffling, but hey, it's 2020. Years from now, I suspect we'll look back at all the strange to have occurred this year and laugh. At least I hope so. Most of the rule is not new, but Dorna clarified the procedure back in 17 or 18 after Argentina when Marc Marquez stalled on the starting grid and Marshall failed to direct him off the grid. So Michael and I had a great conversation. We went back and forth on this a couple of times. And not only did we talk about where Joe could have finished if he actually had made it around in time to start in front of the safety car, we both agreed that he maybe gains one, maybe two places, and he's probably one or two places farther up the grid, farther up the finishing order, having not started from pit lane. So we agreed on that. Then we kind of got on to the whole thing about whether we thought how Joe would do if he goes to Italtrans. I think that Joe is probably – you can chime in on this too, Skylar. I think Joe's going to probably do pretty good on that bike. It's a proven team, proven winner. I think Joe probably will do pretty well there. We speculated about how Cam Beaubier would do on Joe's old bike and what he could do with that. And then we started talking. We find out that Michael has actually known Cam Beaubier for over a decade. He grades his talent incredibly high. I'll go with the man on that one. I only know what I can see there. And we were talking about how Joe has been up against some rather stiff competition. I think the guys at the Moto2 level are definitely all got their act together. And how Cam has been racing in the U.S. And you know, as much as it pains me to say it, the racing in the U.S. is not as good as it could be, and the competition is not as good as it can be. But again, Cam was a Red Bull rookie. He's been in Europe before, and it was a great conversation that we had back and forth the whole way through. So, Michael, thank you for writing in. Thank you for setting us straight and providing some insight that we didn't collect or didn't think about. And it was great to talk about Cam and Joe and how they're going to do and how great it's going to be just to have two Americans in Moto2 to root for. You got anything you want to add into that, Skylar?
Sure. A couple things. I will need to go back and look at this video because it's my understanding there's two safety cars. There's the one that takes off at the front. No one catches that car and passes it on the warm-up. But that one goes out and he comes back around, right? And then there's the one that sits at the back. And he just pulls off the wall when everybody comes back around. So
then when that car pulls out and assumes its position directly behind the pack, that is when Joe needed to be there before that happened.
Right. So my question is, who makes the call to that car to say all riders have made it to their box? Is there a flag? Is there a radio communication? Because if they're just doing that off the assumption that they look at the last riders pulled up to the box, then that wouldn't be correct because they need to be called to say riders round. Because let's say Joe was skating around that corner and he just whips it out in front of him or something like that. That'd be a dangerous situation, right? Or could be potentially. So I'm going to look into that a little further because something along those lines there doesn't quite add up about beating a safety car around. Because it seems like the safety car would be a called thing to the grid and not a judgment thing. But as far as the whole Cam Beaubier thing, I've known Cam because he actually is really good friends with the kid I used to work with back when I was a mechanic as well. So I've seen him come around and he was a little pimply punk kid in the paddock and I used to give him crap all the time and he went to Moto America and call him a little superstar since he was racking up his championships. Solid kid, good head on his shoulders. I think this time in Europe would be much better for him. When he went there initially, he was like 12, 13 years old when he was over in Europe. And you take any kid out of any country and put them somewhere across an entire ocean, they're probably not going to feel as comfortable. But he did okay when he was there, all things said. Like a Red Bull rookie when he was on the KTM factory team. That's another time. But given that the level of competition that's here, of course, you're going to get pushed harder when you go overseas, right? We've seen this with Garrett Gerloff. You know, I would say he's right there. Him and Cam are very similar in their skill set. We've seen them go head-to-head in Moto America. And then Gerloff has really, really excelled this year in Superbike. He's not even on the factory team. He's been on several podiums and had a couple front row starts. And he's just kind of – and that's with him learning the tracks as well. So, obviously, there is a talent level that is here. Now – you go to Moto2 and you're stepping it up again because I mean, you're looking at guys that came out of Moto2 and MotoGP and gone to Superbike and how well they've done. Bautista, Redding, you know the competition in Moto2 is great. I think he's going to a team that's going to support him 100%, which is great because he's going to need that in his learning year. But they also have some accomplishment. So he can go in there knowing that the bike is good, the team is good. And if he's got that in his mind, he knows that he can push and work hard. It's going to be great for his development, and the competition that is there will really get to see what he's made of. And I think he's going to probably, you know, take his little bit of time in the beginning, but I think on the back half of next year, we're really going to see him come around, and we're going to see Cam be able to do it, because Cam is not afraid to send it. And that'll be sure. And there'll be a couple spills and mishaps when he'll get his head around it and he'll figure it out. But he's super, super talented kid. And I think he's going to do real well.
Good. I mean, I'm happy for any American that can make it to the world stage. Mm-hmm. And I will throw my full support and weight behind them and wish them all the best and hope that, you know, they can become the next, you know, champion after the late, great Nicky Hayden. And, you know, join that other long list of Americans who have gone overseas and have won titles. So I'm all 100% for these guys. And I'm great. It's great that they have these rides and that, you know, that Joe is getting, I would say, a preferred ride in mm-hmm. Moto2. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Oh, no. It's all trans. They've been around. And yeah, when you go to a team like that, you don't have to worry about can the team do it. It's you. At that point, I mean, Bastianini sure. is, we'll get to that, but he's on that bike right now and he's doing A-okay. So
he's just fine.
Yeah. he's in good hands. And the fact that Hopper is able to, he's his manager as well, is able to Ooh, start.
That was the other thing we were talking about. Mike, when I'm talking about is like, where does Hopper go?
I mean,
does Hopper follow Joe to Taltrans?
I don't think he has to. He's just his manager, isn't he? I mean, he can.
Well, I think Michael said that he was listed as the rider coach for Tenor, but Joe refers to him as his manager and mentor. And, you know, I don't think Joe is Joe unless Hopper's with him.
I mean, I think he could easily go with that. Now it depends on what Hopper's got in that team, right? Does he have any share, any money or whatever put into that American team? I mean, that could still be the case. He could still go over and work somewhere else. I mean, your money is an investment and doesn't lock you down, as so you have to be someone that works there. But that's a good question. I would assume if that's how the partnership, rider coach mentorship, he would probably go with Joe, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe Hopper's whole thing is like, look, I get you started and it's up to you to make this. You're not going to work with the same person all the time. You got to learn how to work with others. Maybe there's that mentality. I don't know.
Yeah. I think Hopper goes with Joe mm-hmm. and there's nothing that says that he can't split time between Joe's pit and Cam's pit.
Yeah. The only time that would be a no-no is if one was one in the championship and the other was two in the championship.
I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna go sit in the truck.
I'm gonna have an espresso. Well, and sit over here on the corner. but yeah, it's you know, like you said, it's good to see that we're having some more Americans going there. It's great to see that Joe was able to get everyone kind of on the radar. Like, hey, this guy came out of the series. What else you got? And then, you know, Gerloff went over there and did really well, and he's doing really well. So it's like, oh, look, there's talent. Like, we knew this, but the world doesn't get to see us. And we don't really know because we don't prove ourselves against the world. And then here comes Cam. It's like, okay, now if Cam does really well, then it's just like, who do you want to take next, right? Who's over here? So we're going to have to wait and see. But, you know, that's all going to be for 2021. And we've got 2020 to talk about. And guess what, Jim? We're almost at the halfway point in the show.
What else is new? It's 2020.
All right, so that's going to take us to the Moto 3 qualifying. Now, here's the thing, Jim. I actually did get to watch qualifying this week.
Good for you.
However, I didn't really take any notes on it because it was kind of like I had to do two things at once, but I did get to watch.
That's good.
So your talking points, I'll be actually able to maybe add a little bit to if I've got anything for it. But for Moto 3 qualifying, why don't you go ahead and take us through it?
In the first QP session, Toba, McPhee, Sasaki, Faggia, and Rodrigo are all in that session. Shocking that McPhee's in that spot, but it's 2020. the competition is really pretty fierce. And Faggia is like the rocket on that Honda anyway. So I'm like, why are these guys actually here? As it turns out, when it all the dust finally settles, Tatai goes through, Sasaki goes through, Rodrigo had a great run right at the last minute to actually secure a third spot, and McPhee went through as well to get into that all-important QP2 session. In QP2, Fernandez was setting some blistering laps, and he was doing it by himself. The boy was just out there putting the laps in, throwing it down. That's how you got to do it. That's the way you should do it. All these guys were playing around, waiting on the back straightaway, looking for the toe, lingering around. I mean, even Matt Bird and Steve Day were all up in arms about it. I don't know what we're going to do to stop this, but I do not want to see single lap, super pole-esque qualifying Mm-mm. in this class. Mm-mm. I don't want to see it. I don't. I hated it when it was in Formula One. I hated it in World Superbike, and I'm gonna hate it here too.
It was unwatchable. It just is. Yeah, it's unless like you have a favorite writer, you show up and watch that person. Other than that, it's just completely boring.
Yeah, there's no watching for red helmets to figure out who's fast or not. You can't build any drama in it whatsoever.
No.
So, again, all these guys are cruising. We got to figure out some way to stop this. You know, I mean, there was a bunch of guys to the inside of the track, a bunch of guys to the outside of the track. It's like, okay, if somebody's really trying to come through on a hot lap, mm-hmm. where are they supposed to pick to go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was borderline dangerous at that point.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I don't have any ideas of how to fix it.
Did I lose you?
I thought the 1QP2 idea was going to solve this. Mm-hmm. No, sure didn't. Either way, it was at the very end. It was Fernandez. It's Vietti, right? Because I always get that messed up. Fernandez.
Vietti.
Right, Arenas, Lopez, Suzuki, Frenati, Tatai, Ogura, and Rodrigo. That is how it went. That's how it went down.
So I've got one for you here.
Sure.
I talked to my buddy not so long ago about this in Formula One when they were kind of having issues, or still having issues, where there's a track that's at full speed, or a car that's full speed on the track, and then there's cars that are like on their cool down recharge lap. And it's like, what do we do to make it safe? And we talked about MotoGP as well. And like, how are you, you got to get these guys off the track, and what are we going to do about it? Well, we had an interesting idea because you have onboard telemetry. Everybody knows what these bikes are doing at every single point in the track. So if you set a percentage, like saying you have to be at 80% of what's considered a full lap pace lap, right? If you dip below that 80% time, you're done. You're pulled off the track in qualifying, and you start at the back where your championship points decide where you go. That's it. Like, there's no long lap penalty. It's boom, you're done. You pull in. That's it. It's over. And if you're 15th in the championship, and the person who qualified, you just keep going. You get gridded up depending on where you're in the championship, and that's about it.
I like it.
And my buddy said, even so, like, in second time offenders, they start taking points out of you. Like, that'll make guys wake up real quick. And because, like, okay, you get on the track, it's a race track, not a drive around track, not a pace track. It's a race track. Get out there, get on the throttle, get your job done.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. Huh. Hey, if you guys out there got anything else, just send it in to us, motopod@motopodcast.com. Give us your ideas on how we can fix this putting around in Moto 3.
Yeah, because, I mean, what was it the last time we had ideas for, like, when we came up with the blinkers in the curbing?
Oh, the safeties?
Yeah, stuff? There was ideas from that discussion.
There was a lot of great ideas from a lot of different people about all different kinds of ideas that we could do. I mean, it's that outside-the-box sort of group think idea that is pretty cool at times.
Right. So in the qualifying, Moto 3, what do we always say, Jim? Qualifying...
Doesn't matter where you start as long as you're in the first three rows.
That's right. But this week, it's going to be a little bit different because there's a couple names to pay attention that are in the back. Joan Macias in 17th. Oh, man. Jeremy Alcoba in 16th. And then we got Minho in 13th, Darren Binder starting 11th, John McPhee 10th. None of those guys in the first row. But then, Jim, there was a Moto3 race.
Yes, there was. So to start it, you have to remember that both Lopez and McPhee are going to have to take the long lap penalty for infractions. McPhee's infraction was for being slow during qualifying. And Lopez's problem was because he had taken out his teammate at the previous race in Le Mans. So he was going to, his sin required him to take the long lap penalty. From there, you want to roll with this, or how do you want to?
No. You go ahead.
Okay.
I'll jump in with some points.
Okay.
But
okay.
No.
I wasn't sure because, you know, you'd watch this. So I was thinking, you know, hey, whichever way you want to go at.
I don't know.
But Arenas got a hole shot again. Now, he's twice now. He's gotten two very good hole shots. He was followed by Fernandez, Vietti, and Suzuki. Then Fernandez basically blew by him. Then Rodrigo, he's at turn 13. He high sides himself into the moon. So there's a first casualty of all of this.
He sure did. I mean, classic high side too.
Yeah.
You don't see that too often, but I mean, he sent himself pretty darn well, which is a bummer because I think he crashed in Le Mans too, didn't he?
I don't think Rodrigo crashed at Le Mans.
Oh.
I could be wrong. It happened a week ago. Come on. I'm lucky I know what day it is now.
Yeah, I'm about to say it.
It's the 7th anniversary of the 15-day lockdown, right? Something like that. It's like perpetually Groundhog Day.
Oh, it certainly is.
Anyway. So it's Fernandez and Suzuki and Arenas. They're having a very, very good race out front. Binder has started to, as usual, make his way to the front. Vietti is falling back. He was again on a hard rear. Was the hard rear not working? Did he not have enough energy in it? You know, what the heck was he going to do? We had the top five bikes pulling away. And remember, Aragon has been a weird track for Moto3 because we've had some races where the guy out front has simply broken away and led every lap. And it's like, well, okay, we've got five bikes getting away is not too bad. The championship was interesting because Agura was 10th. Again, here's Agura on a bike that we know is fast, should be fast, with a kid that was able to work at least at the beginning of the year and ride well and show up at the end. But he's 10th, so cross your fingers that Agura is going to get through there. Binder is a man who has been completely changed.
Yep.
Since he got that win, and he now, I guess, either has the confidence to know that he can do it, but he has been surgically slicing his way through the pack, and he had moved his way up to lead the race. McPhee was charging up. He took his long lap penalty on the third racing lap because you had to do it by the fourth racing lap. So he did it on the third lap. Lopez did it on the fourth lap. Both of them did really pretty good to go through that long lap penalty and keep their momentum up and get back out and join traffic. So they both did really good with that long lap penalty. It was interesting that Mossi and McPhee were dragging the second group to the first because they, by this point, Mossi and McPhee kind of had teamed up. They were kind of together. They were at the, you know, that 6, 7, 8 train of bikes that was behind the top five bikes. And they started to just basically pull that chain back up. So it was becoming sort of the normal Moto3 thing where like suddenly, here comes the whole group tends to come together. But Fernandez was out front still at this point, was looking really, really good on it. He was on it. I mean, Fernandez, you know, you're thinking, man, he's going to come away with a win here soon.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much talent, too much effort that he's putting into it. He's got Saturdays figured out, but it's the Sunday, it's the racecraft. He's getting beat by the guys who've got the experience, who've been in the class a couple years, maybe 3 years. So,
and importantly, Fernando's, he had to sharpen up his elbows. That was kind of his Achilles heel. Had a little bit of Gabriel Rodrigo syndrome where he would get into the battles, and then all of a sudden he kind of get knocked back and, you know, in one lap lose four positions. I think he took notes and he's been studying because he certainly had his elbows out.
Yes, yes. Agoura is 16th by roughly halfway.
Yeah.
Vietti is 12th. It's like, oof, what the heck is going on here? Don't really know. That Binder, Arenas, Masia, Fernandez, Fernati, whole thing is just a great little bit of racing. I mean, there's that one point where Fernandez had been shuffled down three or four places, and then in three corners he was right back to the front again. I mean, as you said, he sharpened the elbows, right? And he got himself, he got knocked back. It's like, it's sort of like, hey boy, we're going by. We got you. Okay. You've been here long enough. And he kind of said to the old guard, hey, nope. I got the elbows. I got it. We're good. I'm going right back through you, which he did, which now I'm starting to see a lot of mental strength.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have. He's on a good team, right? He's in the IO team, the factory KTMs. I mean, if you don't have Fernandez on your radar for a championship contender next year in Moto 3, I think you're missing the boat.
Yeah, he's a real young guy. He's going to be getting up there for sure next year, especially with the run of confidence he's going to have coming to the end of this year. He's only going to be stronger.
Yep. Basically, as it was winding down with a couple laps to go, McPhee ran wide at turn one. That pretty much ruined his race.
Mm-hmm.
Fernandez was pushing with Masia, and they go through the inside on the curb and the run to 11. Those two guys were just all over each other. Masia then blows by Fernandez, and Binder drafts by going into 15. Basically, chaos has started. You don't know who's going to be there, where it is. It's just basically you're like, what's going to happen? And you know, as they did all the drafting and weaving going down to the last couple turns, these 15, 16 there at the end of the track, it comes around to the start finish line. We got Masia who wins. Binder gets a podium in second. Fernandez gets his first podium in third. Then Fanati, McPhee, Alcoba, Arenas, Suzuki, Vietti, who worked his way back up from, I think, as low as he was maybe 13th or 12th or 13th, worked his way back up to at least be ninth. So he figured something out and got it going. Never did figure out what was wrong with his bike or anything like that. Then it was Faggia, Toba, Tatai, Suzuki, Agoura, and Anshu actually scored a point. And that was a thrilling MotoGP, Moto 3 race.
Right. And it's hard for us to actually capture the excitement, especially these last couple of races, because if our notes were true to what the race, it'd be Masia passes Fernandez passes Masia. Oh, look at Alcoba's on the side. Oh, here comes Fanati. Oh, Fanati ends up bumping back. It's that's four corners on one lap.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, you're not doing yourself any favors by listening to us talk about it. We're talking about it in a very high level overview of what took place, but you gotta go watch
the major
these
points
guys.
Of what, you know, the idea that Fernandez was knocked back and sharpened his elbows and comes back forward in three corners. You know, that's a high level but important part of the race, as you've said. We're just not mired into the you gotta watch it. You need to go watch the race.
You have to watch it. I mean, we're just recapping. Go watch the race. I don't know why you're listening to us. If you're listening and you haven't seen it, just stop now. Obviously, you have time to listen to us jabber. Go watch some professionals do their job much better than us. But anyway.
No. What the people listen to is they want to hear the poignant questions. So here's my question to you. Masia exceeded track limits on the last lap.
Mm-hmm.
When they were – because they were – where were they? They were heading to – was it turn 12?
Something
I think.
Like that.
Heading to turn 12. So I give you this. Should he have been docked one position?
All right. So this is a sticking point that we've been talking about this season, the track limits, and now all this green paint is on all these tracks, right? So we can certainly see it. And so it comes down to the question is, if you go out of bounds, is it a penalty? Or is it you went out of bounds and gained an advantage, right? Because that's kind of been some of the language people have used before. Running wide at the exit of this corner means you can carry more speed, which means you have an advantage. Whereas this was bikes are moving around and he took avoiding action to stop a collision, even though he could have went to the right because he knew the left was approaching. He was trying to put his bike into a spot that didn't necessarily exist on the track. Okay, so now it's really, what is the letter of the rule and how has it been enforced? Because if the letter of the rule is you go out of bounds on the last lap anywhere on the track, you get demoted, then they didn't follow the rule.
But if I give you Jorge Martin in Austria.
I give you Quartararo. I mean,
I think the one that's most apt was Martin, because Martin wins the race only to have it taken away from him because he exceeded it by 2 inches.
Yes.
To which I have said, was Marini was behind him? Did Marini also go across that yes. little bit of green patch?
Yes.
But it comes down, like you said, it's the intent of what it should be. What was going on here in this case? And where is the letter of the law?
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, again, which way was your interpretation? I'm telling you, Skyler Vicor, you are MotoGP steward for this race. How do you call that?
Oh, well, I mean, you don't want me a steward because I'm just going to let it go. I saw racing, and I would call the same for Mir earlier this year. I'm not looking at that as a like you got to be demoted. The penalty's too harsh for the crime. You shortcut a chicane, yeah, you're going back. you start penalizing some racing. Yes, he did run wide. I will definitely say that. Is it worth him losing a place? Nope, because it didn't gain him a place. That's how I kind of look at it. It really actually didn't even gain him. He actually lost a little bit after he kind of wiggled over there because he had to wiggle out of the draft. So the way I view it is fine. Let him have I think it was fine, personally.
Well, to me, there was no distinct advantage, period. And if that's basically what we're talking about is, did you gain an advantage by going off the track, off the racing circuit? No, he did not.
Nope.
He was, you could almost say that he was kind of forced there. Although, if you look at it from the onboard, he had a decision and he chose a different way. Now, maybe he thought, I can't remember who was in third place, maybe Arenas was right there. And maybe he was afraid that Arenas was going to be there if he tried to move to the right. So, you don't know that. I thought that if I am the steward for that weekend, I'm like, nope, that is not a penalizable offense. If I was the steward at Austria, I would not have penalized Jorge Martin. That's just how I see it. Mm-hmm. So,
but then again, we are not experts.
We are not.
And it's your opinions and views.
Yes.
All right.
So let's wrap up Moto3 by going through the championship.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Arenas still leads. He's on 144 points. He's ahead of Agüero by 13 points now. It's looking like it is Arenas' championship to lose with 4 rounds left to go. I think he is broken the back of everybody else. Obviously, Agüero is having some serious problems trying to make the Honda work, at least for him, in these cooler temperatures that we are experiencing now. A lot of people, that's a big talk in MotoGP. I think there's a lot of that talk for at least some of these guys here. And you know, as soon as we got rid of the warm and it got to the cold, starting in Barcelona, Agüero has been nowhere. And he can't seem to figure out what to do to get it to work for him, which is shocking. But then Vietti is now third in the championship because he bounces in front of Arbolino, who was absent and might be absent next week as well. Then McPhee, Masia, Fernandez, Suzuki, Binder, and Rodrigo round out your top 10.
There you go. So that brings us over to Moto2. So in Moto2 qualifying, in the first QP1 here, we had Schroeder, Virhe, Martin, Luthien, Baldehar, Nagashima. They were in it. But only, I think, was it Martin and Luthi and Nagashima, they made it over to the first one, right?
And Simone Corsi.
And Simone Corsi, yes. They made it over to Q2. Now, Q2 was interesting. This actually had a lot of good pep to it for Moto2. It was very, very tight qualifying. But, you know, Sam Lowes, man, he has been on a charge.
Yes.
This seems like, whereas like Sam's has good confidence all year, there's been a setup. This feels like a setup change. They found a sweet spot for Sam, and he is just on his business right now. If he had had this bike in the beginning of the season, I think this championship is already far over.
Isn't part of it the fact that Lowe's couldn't ride the first round in Qatar because he hurt his shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that shoulder is now kind of up to par. Good and point. He's fully healed, so he can ride as himself. Because if you're nursing an injury, especially a shoulder injury,
yeah,
that affects your braking. It affects how, you know, if you're transitioned from, say, left to right or right to left, exactly, depending on which shoulder it is that it hurts. Mm-hmm. And so you consequently ride to cover that injury, right? You try to use your legs more, or you use your other arm more, or whatever it is. It's not your natural way that you sit on a motorcycle. It's not the natural way that you feel on a motorcycle. It's foreign to you. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, I'm trying to think of like how it's kind of like if you have here in America, if you have like a pickup truck and you got a little sports car and you're driving the sports car for a couple of days and you go jump in the truck and it's like, whoa, this thing doesn't handle, doesn't stop. And you're uncomfortable with it and you don't know how to fix it. And you get back in you get back in your little sports car and whoa, hey, it goes, it stops, it turns. Woo, this is fun again. It's sort of like that. So,
yeah. Absolutely, you know, especially when you work around. And then, of course, when you're trying to work around an injury, you actually can cause more soreness or even strange injuries to the rest of your body because mm-hmm. they're overworking to compensate for that injury. So it screws up your flexibility and your spatial awareness and everything else that you need to ride a motorcycle at 100%. So, like I said, that's probably has a lot to do with it. But speaking of Sam being on a tear, he does take the pole position with a nice 151.6 lap.
It was a lap record too.
Yeah, it was a lap record. But here's the crazy.
He shattered it.
He did.
Shattered it, really.
He did. But it's a testament to the entire field because you have to go all the way down to 13th place before you get over a second covering. So top 12 riders all covered by 1 second. That's a tight field. So that means we got anybody can win. So you got Lowe's, Bezzecchi, and Marco Bezzecchi. He is picking it up. Well, I mean, he is starting to actually outperform his teammate on a regular basis now. He's like, oh, man, he's becoming quite handy in Moto2. Fabio Di Giantonio finishes up there in third. It's just a fun name to say, Jim.
I have this embodiment of the movie Godfather going through my head. I'm sorry.
I say it with the fingers pulled back and clasping the, you know, the fists and the shaking. Like that's I even stand here and say it as I'm doing it. So you got to get the full effect going when you say that name. Jake Dixon, another strong performance. Speaking of Brits that have really turned it on so far lately, Jake Dixon is another. He's actually re-signed with the Petronas Sprinter team for 2021. Definite championship contender next year if he continues on the same form that he is now. Marcos Ramirez, he's there in fifth. Jorge Navarro coming up to sixth. He needed a good result, so he started the weekend off right by getting there in the second row in sixth place there. Luca Marini in seventh. Jorge Martin in eighth. And Augusto Fernandez in ninth, finishing out our top three rows, which then took us into the Moto2 race. All right, so Marco Bezzecchi, he gets the whole shot, gets up there. He's looking strong. And then riders were focusing on him pulling away. We see that there was a rider that went down in the middle of everyone, which is the scariest thing. So someone from the front, he almost got his leg hit, or maybe he did. And that would have been Jorge Navarro. This guy's year, he wants to hit Control-Alt-Delete on this year because it has not been a good season for him. It continues to get worse. I think this is like his seventh DNF, Jim, for the year, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been terrible. It's been an absolutely terrible year.
Yeah.
Thank goodness everybody was able to miss him. I think maybe he got an ankle or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was definitely lower extremity. It might have been just glancing off on the boot or whatever. Because he was down for a little bit of time. I would be too. He got tumbled around a lot. And it did look like from the videos that he did get clipped, which I never want to see, but he was able to get up, walk away on his own steam, so we're all good right there. And then, go ahead.
I'll say, but then You know, there was another crash, but this was much.
Yes.
As far as the champion goes, Luca Marini went down, which is a huge championship blow. He actually crashed, lost the front end going into, I think they call it the corkscrew there as well. He just got off the line a little bit. Maybe, I think they said he got a little too close to the inside curb and got a little chatter and poof, down he went.
Gone.
And you crashed that early. Everybody goes by. They couldn't get the bike restarted and he's walking to the pits. Definitely not what he wanted.
You know what that means when you got a championship leader that falls off on a triumph.
It's all wide
open. Jim has to rant about whether there should be a starter on it.
Right?
No, I will spare you all the fact that they're the rant about having a starter on the triumphs. I think they should, but anyway, neither here nor there. But that does do a lot of damage to Marini's championship because he had a very bad Le Mans, and now he's not going to score any points at all on this one. So,
and to make matters worse, all the people who need to score points to catch him were either at the front or making their way towards it. So,
yeah, not, bad timing.
Yeah, bad double whammy there. So at this point for Moto 2, at the beginning of the front, they were getting to spread a little bit because there were some seriously hot laps being put in early. I think Bezzecchi was trying to break him. Sam was there. Jake was there. They're all trying to run with about 16 to go in this area. Now, with about 12 to go, there wasn't a whole lot of track on action as far as like passing, but it was simmering, right? You could see it was there. You could tell these guys are biding their time. Nobody had really shown their hand yet. It was very, you could tell the action was coming. And then when DJ Antonio got by Bezzecchi, that's where they had a close collision there on the back straight. I feel like that's when the shift of this whole thing kind of different started, because at this point everyone started getting racy, you could see the bikes getting pushed harder. And then as soon as DJ Antonio got by Bezzecchi, you think the racing is going to go on. He goes down in turn two with the lead with 11 to go, and it's like, dude, you just got the lead and you crash. Another victim of turn two. That's where everybody seemed to go down. It was not a good corner because, you know, it's kind of like where your tire gets a little cold and you've been on the left side of it for so long. You know, you got to come down the straightaway. You go 16, 17 on the left. First turn's on left and then turn two on the right hand tire. And poof, away you go. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see that crash and you see it from the aerial view, all props in the world to that corner crew at turn two. They were running before DJ Antonio's bike had ever stopped flipping and rolling. They were on it. And now, well, you know, we had that long discussion, corner workers and marshals and all that good stuff with the whole safety thing from Austria. So I just want to be sure that I give some props to these people who were there in turn two. They had a busy weekend. They had a busy race day and they were absolutely 100% on it. So a big, you know, round of applause from the Motopod crew here to those corner workers in turn two. They did some fantastic work.
Absolutely. Now we had about five laps to go and we want to see this race because Bezzecchi, hey, a small gap over Lowe's, but we know Lowe's can just close that gap and we can get a race going. We're like, okay, it's these two. This is where it's going to be. And then with two laps to go, Bezzecchi crashes that lead in turn two as well. And it's like, oh, dude, we kind of got robbed. Like, I was expecting
that.
That'd
have been a good race at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, it was lining up to be good. But Sam Lowe's, he rode. My dad is going to hate this because he hates when people say this, but he rode within himself.
first, you must finish.
That's right. But he ended up getting the championship. He ended up winning the race, and you're thinking, oh, he's going to lead the championship. Oh, not quite so fast, because the beast, Enea Bastianini, who started way back in the field in 12th place, ends up making his way. He was setting hot laps the entire race, gets past everybody, makes a bunch of catching moves, gets himself up into, wait for it, second place. And then he goes ahead and grabs the championship lead. It brings it in tight. So let's give you a rundown here through the championship.
Wait a second. You missed the important point with Bastianini. On the last lap, he goes by Martin to get second.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, him and Martin were actually having a great battle. They were actually duking it out back and forth. Martin was a dog with a bone. He would just not let Bastianini go every time he tried to get by him.
That was the best race, was those two.
Mm-hmm.
And Bastianini gets him. And if Bastianini doesn't get him, right, that's a 3, what's the point difference there, like three points or something like that? Because it's 25, 20, 15, 18? Or 18.
Yeah, 18, yeah.
So that's 2 points. And even in the grand scheme of things, if Bastianini doesn't get those 2 points...
Right? He's not sitting, he's not grabbing the championship lead, but he's going to be up
that's
there.
That's right. So, I mean, this is one of these things where you might want to look back later on after we figure out who actually wins this championship and go, that was significant.
Yeah. Remember when, like, last week, Sam Lowes was 22 points out? And you're like, psh, his season might be over. Wait, what?
We're writing him off.
That's right. Nope. Right back in it. All right. So, like I said, Sam Lowes gets the win. Bastianini in second. Jorge Martin gets the third place. He gets on the podium. Good for him. Jake Disson brings it home in fourth. Another strong result by Jake, whose team told him, look, dude, we appreciate you running at the front, but we need you to stay on the bike and get the finish. So Jake probably might have dialed the back a little bit this weekend. Got that fourth place. Get some money for the team. It's good. Remy Gardner, another strong fifth place. Marcos Ramirez had a nice quiet finish there in sixth place. I think that's his best result with the American Racing team, actually, I think is for Marcos Ramirez there. Hector Gartho, he finished there in 7th. Joe Roberts in 8th. Tetsuya Nagashima in 9th to round out your top 3, or rows, I guess it would be, so top 9, right? Whatever. And that brings us to a championship, because this is the most exciting part of all this. With that 2nd place, like Jim had mentioned, Enea Bastianini gathers enough points over the weekend to take the championship lead on 155 points, 2 points in front of Sam Lowes, who is in turn 3 points in front of Luca Marini because of his spill. So Luca went from leading the championship by, I think it was 11 points or something like that, to being in third, some 5 points out. Marco Bezzecchi, if he didn't crash, he's in this too. But because of this crash, he's 20 points out. But Sam Lowes can tap him on the shoulder and be like, hey, bud, it doesn't really matter. I was 22 points out just a week ago, so, you know. Bada boom, bada bing. Here we go. Jorge Martin, this is where he used to get the step back. Those top four, probably still in it. Jorge Martin is probably out of it now. He's on 95 points, just in front of Nagashima, Roberts, Gardner, Luthi, and Marcel Schrotter.
Yep. It was a fantastic Moto 2 race. And now the championship has been blown wide open. We got 4 races left, and man, who knows what's going to happen? But I mean, Lowes is in the form of his life right now.
Yes.
And I would not bet against there being 1 or 2 wet races in these final 4. And I would not bet against Sam Lowes in those conditions at all.
Wet or mixed conditions? I'm putting all my money on Sam Lowes.
Oh, you're going to bet the farm?
I'll bet the farm. If it's mixed or wet conditions, I'm putting it on it. Because he's got his confidence this year, and you give him mixed conditions. I mean, mixed conditions is just, that's comfort food for him.
Yeah. Being a Brit. You're really true about that, you know? I mean, because it seems like in the mixed conditions, our Italian friends don't seem to quite have it, do they? I mean, we have a large sample size of Le Mans, which is a hard enough track to stay upright on to begin with, but yeah. Oh, man. Just makes everything seem great.
Yep.
You know what? We should really talk about MotoGP.
We should probably get there because we're already an hour into the show.
I know.
And we haven't even got to the big dance yet. And I'm going to hate editing this. So let's get to
it. All right. Here we go. I'm gonna read some names out to you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to guess which round of MotoGP qualifying we're talking about. In no particular order. Binder. Dovizioso. Miller, Petrucci, Bagnaia, Zarco. What GP, what are we in? Q1, Q2, which one are we in?
Well, Jim, since we're at Aragon, I know this is a Ducati and KTM favorite track, so we must be talking about Q2.
No, we're talking about Q1. I was, man, when you threw those whole list of people there in Q1?
At this track, like, at all those Ducatis, you gotta be kidding me, dude.
I know. Miller was only there because he got caught out because of passing under a violation with the yellow flag.
Mm.
You know, he hadn't yielded enough time through a yellow sector, so he got his best time clipped. So that would have put him into the first session, but he wasn't able to. I mean, we saw some serious emotion show up here in this qualifying session because as it wound down, only Petrucci and Miller get to go through. Now, the factory Ducati squad of Petrucci and Dovizioso looked like they had something worked out because they were sort of together the whole time, towing each other. And at the end, Petrucci goes through. Dovizioso doesn't get to go through. Dovizioso goes in that garage. And, I mean, he threw gloves. He was mad. He called out Petrucci for not honoring an agreement that they had. And you name it, man. It was all over the place. Now, that is some serious frustration in Dovizioso's part. And I have never really seen Dovizioso that animated or that angry at all.
No.
But wow. Talk about losing your shit. He lost his shit right there, man. He threw his toys out of the pram.
He's a very, very chill dude from everything. We've never seen actually that much emotion out of it. If anything, he looks about half asleep when you see him. But yeah, he was pissed because, I mean, he's had the championship. But, you know, he definitely felt that, you know, when you have your teammate following you and then he's the one that actually kind of bumps you out because he set his time off you and sets his fastest lap of the weekend because he's following you, I understand where he's getting that feeling from. When they went to Tardozzi and they were talking to him, he was explaining that Dovizioso had already been out and then Petrucci came out of the pits and then had gotten behind him, and he was like, well, what are you supposed to do, just slow down? It's like, no, he just happened to come up behind him and there it goes. And it's like, okay, all right, I hear you, I do, but
I got you, but
there's timing in the pits. These guys are good enough to know when to come out of the pits, when they need to be behind somebody. They watch the monitors, they know how long it takes to get from point A to point B. So I don't know, man. It's Dovi's in the championship hump, Petrucci's not. If I'm team boss, I'm making the call that Petrucci needs to be in front and you need to pick up a draft off of him. But then again, Petrucci maybe could run lap times Dovizioso when he was giving him a tow.
No. I do not want – okay, here comes Formula One definition here. A Rubens Barrichello rider riding alongside of my factory team, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Much in the Schumacher era, Barrichello basically was wingman to Schumacher, yielded every position to Schumacher for the points. I do not want that in MotoGP. Sorry. Mm-mm. Don't want it. I mean, no.
Yeah.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. So let's get through to... So basically, Petrucci and Miller get to go through to Q2.
That's right.
In Q2, we get what we would expect to have happen in there. It's a run for who's going to be the fastest. It's basically Quartararo on pole. Why wouldn't we not think it? He's sort of become the Saturday man. And he did this after basically high-siding himself and slamming his hips into the pavement in FP3, which that crash is still horrifying looking.
And he had the crash in FP1 as well.
One, which did the other side. He either did the left first, then the right, or the right, then the left. Take your pick. But he wound up whacking both hips. I mean, the poor guy, he's walking. He walked with a crutch on Saturday, and on Sunday he was definitely hobbling. Mm-hmm. But he still put it on pole, which you can't really blame him for that. He was followed by his Yamaha teammate, if you will, Maverick Vinales. Crutchlow threw in an impressive ride on the Honda to be in third place. Then Morbidelli, Miller, Mir, the first Suzuki. That's important where Mir is because he at least got his qualifying correct so that he could be on the first two rows of the grid because he's been languishing and had to come on strong. So that boded well for the Suzukis at the time. Nakagami was seventh. Petrucci was eighth. Then Espargaro, the Aprilia loves Aragon. Then we had Rins. And then we had Alex Marquez, and then Paul Espargaro.
Ooh. Speaking of which, I know this is going to be a long episode, so whatever, we'll just go and talk about it. The Espargaro brother collision in qualifying with Alex Marquez. Okay, Jim, I want you to talk about it, and I'm going to talk about it. I want to see if we landed in the same area. Who's at fault here?
Paul.
Okay.
That's how I see it.
It's the way I saw it, right?
Yeah.
The Espargaro brothers, I don't know what they got together after this and decided, oh, Alex Marquez is at fault. Hold on, Chief. Y'all ran into each other. So let's put this shit together real quick because Alex Marquez didn't hit anybody. Now, he took a wide line because he was slowing down, which, let's frankly, he was probably waiting for a tow. He says he wasn't, but whatever, dude. Pol Espargaró was on a hot one. But if that's the case, then Aleix drifted wide. Alex actually had to go around him. So who exactly was cruising? Aleix was cruising, and then Pol ran into him, and then they somehow blame Alex for their fuck-up. And I'm just like, dudes, at this point, it's a little bit of STFU and get on with it, because you kind of both, like, you kind of messed up on your own, and you're pointing fingers. You need to go stand in front of a mirror and take a good look.
Yeah. I am not doubting Pol's talent by any stretch of the imagination. But after the really bad accident in Austria, when he was out front and gone by a country mile, he has never been able to put the toys back in the pram. It's like that race jacked him up eight ways to Sunday, and pretty much the nail in the coffin of his mental state was Binder winning in Brno. It just, like, dude.
And whoa. Oliveira winning in S in the other
Austria race. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I get the talent. I get why HRC has given you a contract to ride alongside of Marquez. But wow, you have got to have those boys at HRC thinking like, what did we do? Because nothing is without controversy inside of MotoGP and in that, but if all the factories, you sort of have the idea that HRC is kind of like the most polished and they're the most professional of everybody, right? They're, again, Formula One analogy, they're sort of the Ferrari of the world, right? Of the motorcycle world. That's kind of how it is. Everybody wants to ride for you, and yet you can't get your act together and get your headspace right at all, and now you're pulling this crap that it was Alex's fault for when you run into your own brother?
Yeah, and then on top of that, you can have Mark Marquez as a teammate next year, who is probably, unless you have something special, going to finish in front of you more often than not. And if you think having, you know, when you're considered the number one rider on your team and you're getting beat by other guys, I mean, maybe that changes his mindset because he knows he's number two, but you better, I don't know.
Yeah.
Go get your head right before next season, man.
we'll revisit this whole idea after the end of this race, okay?
Yes. So that gets us on to the MotoGP race. So I think we'll do a little give and take here, Jim. All right.
Okay.
So we had the MotoGP race. So Morbidelli, he got the whole shot, but he ran wide and ended up getting Vinales and Quartararo got started. And we had Yamaha's off to a good start. And I think that's probably the last good thing we'll say about them for the rest of this race.
Probably. I think you have to agree with that because it all sort of starts to go wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's some worse than others. But
yes,
I put them here in notes. The Yamaha's all finally had a good start. And that's probably like the last good thing I say about it. But then Rins, man, he had a hell of a start. He went from 10th to 4th. But
quickly. So did Dovizioso. Dovizioso had a hell of a start.
That's right.
From his 15th spot. He went up like five places.
Yeah.
Just from the very beginning.
The Ducati starts well, but Dovizioso just starts well as well. Yeah. Man. English good.
And Skyler, then Cal goes backwards.
Yeah, that was really weird. He didn't get the greatest start, but then he wasn't too far back. Happened. But then he just kind of got beat up.
Yeah. Well, Cal said that on the warm-up lap, he felt the clutch slipping. And he at the last second, he decided to not pull into the pits and swap bikes. So he consequently couldn't use any kind of launch device or whatever. And so he just kind of had to try to feather it away from the start. So
that makes
sense. Was interesting because then he said later on in the race that the clutch seemed to start working right, which how's the clutch start working again? But who knows? Maybe he was fiddling with the adjustment on it and was able to adjust it in to satisfy what was going on. Bagnaia fell.
Oh, on lap three. So, he's,
you know, it's like, oof.
This is a guy that ever since his crash, where did he crash? It wasn't Spain, was it? Where he was leading. Wait, was it Barcelona?
Mazzano.
He was leading. Ever since then, we have not seen the same guy come back.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's a headspace thing. He's even admitted that he's not riding well enough to be a factory Ducati rider next year.
See,
he even said that. So
yeah, that's
yeah.
You don't want.
I think he'll turn around. Yeah, I mean, he'll turn around.
Yeah, we don't want guys saying that kind of stuff because that sounds like a problem between the ears. I mean, you have to believe you're that good all the time. That's how you do good. So we'll see. He's a rookie. He'll figure it out.
Yep.
Vinales was starting to get the gap at the front, and then I live here early in my notes. I said Alex Marquez is looking a little feisty again because he was making passes. He wasn't just slipping back. I mean, he looked good, looked confident. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Rins, he was going to be. We at this point, I was like, oh, he's looking to catch Fabio. Now Fabio Quartararo was out. He was still looking good at this point, but Rins was definitely tracking him down. And Suzuki's just had corner speed. And the one thing that people really haven't really paid attention to, I think, you've talked about it before, though. There's nothing wrong with Suzuki in a straight line. They have surpassed Yamaha in the horsepower department. In fact, Yamaha is the dog of MotoGP now. Everybody in a straight line is faster than the Yamaha. That's not good.
No. Quartararo just starts going backwards, doesn't he?
He sure does.
And he's just, I mean, he's running wide at the last turns and people are just cutting underneath of him and he's just gone. And it's like, it's just a progression going backwards. And the reason? Too much front air pressure. Now, he said that he could tell on the dash that there was too much air pressure in it, which when you have too much air pressure in a front tire, you don't get enough squish. So the braking feels wrong. It doesn't have enough edge bite. The whole nine yards, the feel becomes vague because you're expecting it to squash, and you know what that feels like, and you're not getting the right feel out of it. So Michelin says, hey, you guys put too much air pressure in it at the beginning, and if you would have followed the recommendations that we gave you, you wouldn't have had this problem because nobody else had this problem. Quartararo, he's not believing any of it. So let your conspiracy theories run wild from there on, people.
I don't know. At that point, it's just kind of, we'll wait and see with this week. If this week they make some changes and he goes out there and wins it, well then, there's going to be some fingers to point anywhere. But the Petronas bikes were looking okay at this point, but they were starting to get their dance back to the back. Mir ended up getting both the Petronas riders in one move. He was flying towards the front. Now we got about 16 to go, and the Suzukis are really getting after it. You really see that they're a cut above everybody else. They're cornering through the mid-corner faster. They're getting good drive out of the corners, and they're not losing it on the straightaway to the bikes that are known for being power monsters, like the KTMs, the Hondas, and the Ducatis. Alex Marquez was also still going forward, and he made it past Fabio Quartararo. Now, with Fabio, he was setting fast laps, but actually, this is what I put a little note here. And Fabio has been setting fast laps, but not turning it into race pace lately. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, okay, well, now we know where he needs to focus next week, right? Put on some really crappy tires and go out there and run it in practice. Because at this point in the race, he was in big trouble. And he was losing places left and right. And when you're starting to lose places early in a race, it's really bad because the field is still tight. You start having problems on lap 15. You could probably salvage a couple places just because the gaps are there. But definitely not at this point. So now, at this point, we're saying, you know, we had gotten to the point where the Suzuki's were up front. They're looking good. Alex Marquez is looking good. But he actually, Jim, was threatening to actually possibly win this race.
Yeah. That was where the excitement kind of comes in, right? Marquez has blown through the pack. He's gone past Miller. He's got past Quartararo. And it looks like Le Mans. He's just got it going.
Mm-hmm.
He winds up actually running past Vinales at turn one with an outstanding move because he did it around the outside of Vinales there, which was, hey, whoa, that is pretty damn good riding going on there. He basically runs down Mir and gets Mir, and you've got about he's about a half a second behind Rins. And he's about a tenth of a second faster. Anybody can do that math real quick. He's like, oh, this is going to be like the last lap. He's going to be on Rins. So I kind of quit taking notes because I'm so enthralled in this that Marquez is catching him. And Rins is starting to fade a little bit. He's not running as fast. And boom, man, you know, Marquez is like right there with Rins. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's gonna be on the podium at Le Mans and he's gonna win this one.
In the dry. No excuses.
In the dry. No on a bike crashed. That is notoriously hard to ride.
Yeah, this wasn't half the field crash. This isn't mixed conditions. This is a one for one real deal. You go out there and win. Yes. There's no asterisk next to that whatsoever.
No, there wasn't going to be. Mir had dropped off. I think Mir was thinking championship because he's like, well, these two guys are nowhere near the championship, and I'm ahead of Quartararo. My world is good. So yep. I think he kind of rode it home, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Phoned it in, if you will. But, man, three laps to go, and Marquez makes his move. Now, Marquez was passing everybody the last two turns. Everybody would go a little bit wide. He just snapped the throttle on, cut the Honda, and steer it with the rear.
The line
and it was beautiful, man. It looked like the other Marquez. Because it did. It really did, because that's kind of how Mark rides that bike around there.
Yeah.
Same sort of kind of a thing. And, you know, all credit to the how we have the position of the riders is on the left hand of the screen, mm-hmm. and they had the little pop-out box that was coming where it was showing like Rins, and then it had popped out and it was showing Alex Marquez's dad in there, and he that would just made the drama just that much even better because
Julian's his name, I think, right?
Yeah, Julian. I think it is. You know, he's all like bite fingernails and, you know, fingers crossed the whole nine yards.
He's a very animated guy.
Oh yeah, that was worth the box. I mean, whoever decided to put him in the box, that was brilliant, because David Brivio. Yeah. So he was in there too, you know, the concern look and all that. And then three laps to go, Alex tries to go up at the last turn, and he just gets that smidge too much throttle and throws a serious blackie down on there.
Yes.
And it's one of those where he let off and he caught it, and you're sitting there thinking, yeah, his brother just left it wide open and just rode it out of there, you know. Mm-hmm. And you kind of expect him to do that, but he didn't. And then at that point, it kind of – I think he thought, okay, I've got second place. I think that's good enough. And he just didn't really put a lot of pressure on Rins on that last lap. And so Rins wins this thing. Alex Marquez is second. Mir comes in third, although Vinales almost got him.
Yep.
If it was another lap, I think Vinales would have got him. Then you had Taka Nakagami, Morbidelli, Dovizioso, Crutchlow, Miller, Zarco, and that's your top 10. So let's talk about the HRC thing. There was a tweet by one, and Mark Marquez says, I am the older brother of Alex. Now, he's always said that my brother is better than me, and he's really good. Do you think Alex has shown us enough to prove that he should be an HRC rider?
Well, I mean, small sample size now as far as results, right? We've had two good on the trot. Now, if he continues this pace throughout the year, sure. But I will say that he's done better than any Honda rider this year. And so if one of them is going to get the factory bike next year, you think now...
No, he's going to have a factory bike. He's just going to be at LCR.
Right. The factory team. Has he shown enough? That is a tough question, actually, because if you don't want to just jump to a conclusion like, no, it's his rookie year. He's done a very, very smart campaign. He's progressively gotten faster. He's finished every race he has started this year. He has moved his way up. He learned how to ride in the rain in one weekend and damn near won that race. Comes back the next weekend with completely different conditions on a completely different track and almost wins it. And that's coming from behind. Not even, like we said, no special treatment for this race. There was no, he didn't have the great qualifying. Nobody went down. No one cared. Like, the guys he was racing with actually cared to beat him, right? It wasn't like he got there and everyone's like, oh, we're not in the championship. Go on by. No, is there. So, but That is the most coveted seat in MotoGP. Has he earned it? Oof. I guess it depends on what you're wanting. If you're wanting someone that could team up with Marc Marquez and not ruffle his feathers, it's probably a good choice, actually. If he continues on this form, he could come back. It isn't like this is his only one and done. I mean, he could go over to LCR and have a great season, and Pol might not, and it's a swap-a-roo real easy. And nothing would make Repsol happier than to have Marquez on podiums for the next 6 years. I mean, They just re-signed the deal with Honda too, so that'd be wonderful for them.
You ask me, I think he has made a lot of people step up and look and go, yeah, he's maybe a little better than what we thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
Is he truly deserving of the most coveted ride in the paddock? Not enough sample size to know whether it is or not, But he's got a couple of things that were against him this year. One is the fact that his brother simply wasn't there to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Which if you know, ifs and buts are candy and nuts, and we'd all have a very merry Christmas. But if his brother's there, you think that he's going to be able to maybe progress a little quicker than he has.
Or
according to what I've read in Matt Oxley's article from the GP. Alex has figured out how to ride the Honda now. It's the fact that you have to ride the Honda at 100% every lap, in every braking corner, at every moment on the throttle. You have to be 100% and give it your absolute maximum effort. Everything that you do, your braking, your throttle, your turning, everything has to be maximum 100%. And when you do, the bike gets easier to ride. Well, wait a second. I knew that because you could watch how Mark rode the thing, and he rode it like 15 tenths all the time, and it looked easy when he was doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I think he's deserving of a MotoGP ride. I don't think anyone would disagree with me on that one. It's just, I think he probably really should have been in LCR first, but that just didn't happen because Lorenzo basically just ditched Honda at the last minute, so who are they going to get, right? I agree with you when you said, yeah, he's probably going to come back to it. We know Pol's got a two-year contract. You've let Alex simmer for 2 years on a factory bike at LCR, and I bet he winds up replacing
it could be Pol. 1 year, because remember, it's a contract with Honda. Where they put you is up to them. I mean, they could swap him out next year. So
very true.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about how the Suzukis look so good, how the Yamahas weren't looking any good at all, and what this all means. Again, I refer you to Matt Oxley's articles on Motorsport Magazine. This is where he was doing an in-depth thing on the new rear suspension that Suzuki has been running. So Ohlins Supplies is a Swedish suspension specialist. Basically, the entire grid, save for the KTMs, runs on their forks and on the rear shocks. So they have a new rear shock that is a bi-directional dampening shock. Now, bi-directional dampening is nothing new. It's been done before, but they have something else inside of it that they're not talking about because there's some patents and other things that are being worked on. And when they're finally granted, they said that they would tell a little bit more about how it works. But what they're doing is they're controlling how the dampening comes in and how it works with the motorcycle. Now, Rins and the Suzuki team have been using this shock since the beginning of the year. I take you back to preseason testing when Alex Rins had this big grin all over his face like a Cheshire cat. He knew he had something. He had the shock. The shock is giving them that ability to drive out of the corner and save the rear grip and be able to also get them the squirt out and be able to turn and not overheat and not use that tire up. Rossi tried that shock just before Misano and said it was worth at least a tenth. So there's definitely something in the suspension unit that we don't know exactly what's going on that Owens is not going to tell us. But that is where the Suzuki advantage is right now. The Quartararo, Vinales, they are not running that new shock. Alex Marquez is running that new shock. The Suzuki's running that new shock. That's a very telling little piece of information that we didn't know that we know now. Hmm. So in hindsight, this sort of kind of puts a lot of different pieces of the puzzle together as to what's going on and why the Yamahas are kind of still running out of tire. They're at the end and they're not going anywhere. I found that to be some really, really interesting bit of information, and I'm looking forward to getting some more of it to read more about that. You know, what really are they doing? But from what it sounds like, it says they're just controlling how the dampening comes in, and I'm wondering if they're not passing fluid around from one side to the other to make it so that it eases into it, and so you get like a much more linear or progressive amount of dampening, which allows the bike to squat in a very progressive and linear motion. And if it does that, then you're able to feel grip progressively. And if you're able to feel the grip progressively, and if it makes the throttle application back to that rear tire more connected to you and your thinking. So, you know, I get, you know, a quarter of a turn of throttle gives me a quarter, gives me this much traction. And if I go a little bit more, I'm going to get just a little bit more traction, and it's going to feel the same as I do it, which has got to be brilliant to ride on that way, to know that you're really now connected between throttle to your mind, to your suspension, to your tire, to the grip that you feel. I mean, that's huge, man. So as a mechanic, I didn't know if you want to throw something in on top of that or not.
Oh, no, I was a mechanic, not a suspension guy. That's a whole different black.
You know, that is a black car. That is true. That is true.
Actually, one of the guys that I would sit around and learn with is Mike Canfield, who is Jake Gagne's crew chief. He's worked with a bunch in the Moto America paddock, like Martin Cardenas and quite a few other riders. And he would go around, and that's where I learned suspension tuning from him, and just try to be a sponge around him and pick up information and just... Yeah, that's where there's like three guys on a motorcycle race team that make all the money, right? You've got your crew chief, you've got your suspension guy, and you've got your data guy. Those are all the ones that can make a world of difference on your bike setup. You can throw all the money you want at it, but if you don't have those guys that can put all that stuff together, it doesn't matter. So it is interesting. We will see. I'll start to wonder if, since this week is a repeat, if they'll try to throw that shock in, if it's available to them, because they can kind of
treat this. Oh, yeah, it's available. From what I took from the article, Olens has had that shock since the beginning of the year in preseason testing. You guys are more than welcome to this shock. And no one, they didn't want to take it. And you know how racers are. We kind of want to default to the safe setting. Mm-hmm. We want to default to what we know. And you got to, you know... And if you're Suzuki, you're trying to find some little extra edge, right? So why not throw it on there? And it's turned out that they very well, you know, Mir could very well be world champion.
Yeah. Well, you know,
we haven't even gone through the points.
I was about to say, speaking of the points, you know, we got Juan Mir leading the championship now, courtesy of that third place, and Quartararo having a dismal day on Sunday. He hit the championship on 121 points. Fabio Quartararo slips back to second on 115 in front of his next year's teammate, Marat Vinales, on 109, who's only 3 points ahead of Andrea Dovizioso, who will all just look around and wonder how in the hell he's still in the championship. He's still there. Don't worry. Taka Nakagami, he is the top 100 rider, quietly going about his job on 92 points. And to be honest, he could still really have a chance in the top three here easily for the championship. Franco Morbidelli in sixth place. Alex Rins now jumps up to seventh, courtesy of that win. Jack Miller slides back to eighth place. Hasn't had the second half of the season. He's had some really bad luck this year. Ninth is Paul Espargaró on 77, and Miguel Oliveira coming there in 10th place. So this is the first time since the year 2000, a Suzuki rider has led the championship. They're only 6 points between first and second, and there's only 6 points between second and third, and only three points back. So, I mean, it's what's the word? What's what I'm looking for, Jim? Chaos. That's what it
is. Chaos, yes.
We're heading in.
It's great, though.
In a whole bunch of unknowns. We've got people leading the championship who've never been there before. We've got tracks we've never been to at a time of the year that we haven't been to them. It's cooking up to be a hell of a ending to this season.
It's going to be absolutely phenomenal. And it's going to be, I think you can kind of take Moto 3 out of this one because I kind of think Arenas has got that.
Jim, it's 2020. Yeah. Don't say stuff like that.
Yeah, it's 2020. Yeah. You know what? They're all going to go down to the wire. It's going to be. I feel sorry for who's going to do the quick math in the Moto 2 and the Moto GP class for the final couple of races because it's just going to change constantly up and down the grid. I mean, there's so much going on there. It's just fascinating to me. You really couldn't ask for a season better than this one. And, you know, we waited a long time for it. And I am so glad that it has turned out to be like this because I think it's kind of a just reward just for all of us who follow the sport because we can't be there and fans haven't been there. So there's been the virtual walls that have showed up. And then for us to be sort of rewarded with these guys really racing this hard, even though there aren't fans there, it's just been fantastic. And I cannot wait for these final four races. Because we've got Aragon again this weekend. We get a week off. We get Valencia back-to-back. And then we go to Portimao. This is going to be fun. Buckle up. Make sure you got plenty of tear-offs on. And pull that chin strap really tight. Because it is going to be wild.
Absolutely. And we continue on. We get this weekend. We don't even have to wait that long. We're not anywhere. We're staying put, but we're going to be back at Aragon, and this is going to be. I think they call it Tyrell. I'm going
to
butcher.
No, you need to ask Lynn how to pronounce that one because
I am
confused.
I can do most of it. Gran Premio Liqui Mole de, but then it's Tyrell. They said it a bunch of times during the race too. Whatever. We'll get there, but it's coming down. We're getting close. Just like we're coming down to the end of the show. And remember, folks, you can reach us at Moto. You can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. Go ahead, send us an email. What would you do different as far as qualifying? Do you have any answers to maybe solving the Moto 3, Moto 2, Moto GP issue at sometimes where riders are going too slow on the track, impeding others and creating dangerous situations? Let us know. Do you disagree with any of the points me and Jim have talked about today? Go ahead, write us in. Let us know. Got any beer recommendations? I'm all ears. You want to talk about anything? Just shoot us an email. It goes to all of the hosts. We'll respond to it. And like Jim said, sometimes we start a conversation. Sometimes we just save it for the social. We talk about it. Either way, get in. We love hearing from you all. If you want to hit us up on Facebook, we're there as well. It's facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. You can go there and like and check out any updates. We post certain things there at times. We're also on Twitter. That's @moto_pod. You can follow us there for news announcements and general motorcycle banter. I am also on Twitter and Instagram. @SkylarV28 is my username. Jim, where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter @MotoRGV.
All right, perfect. So that wrap brings us to the end of the show, Jim. Woo, another week.
It was a long one. It was a long one. Hopefully you guys enjoy it because I enjoyed making this one.
I'm not going to enjoy editing it, that's for sure. This is going to be a very cut and paste kind of deal, I believe. Not too much of the little fine-tuning that I go through, taking out certain things, over-talking and silences. And I think we're just going to let it ride good and raw there, Jim.
Sounds good.
All right. All right, everyone. We will see you next week for the race number 3 in this triple header. But until then, zoom, zoom.